Offshore drilling is completely safe. You're getting sleepy. Tax cuts for the rich create new jobs. You're getting sleepy. Financial corporations will police themselves, and illegal aliens are stealing all your pens. Now when I count to three and snap my fingers, you'll awake refreshed and vote Republican. White people are the real victims of racism. You're getting sleepy. Fox News is fair and balanced. Sleepy. Healthcare is a privilege and not a right. We can work together to wipe out the middle class. Now when I count to three and snap my fingers, you'll awake confused and vote Republican. I'm not saying Barack Obama is a foreign-born Islamist puppy eater. I'm not saying that. I'm saying you decide. There's no evidence to suggest that Nancy Pelosi is a thousand-year-old Nazi vampire. But that's what I heard. Somebody said that. It was me. Democrats want to put you in a re-education camp and kill your grandma and bring Stalin back to life. Now when I count to three and snap my fingers, Republican. And we'll prove it. John Boehner uses no tanning products. Sleepy. Newt Gingrich doesn't make shit up. Sleepy. Ben Quayle is gonna knock the hell out of Washington. Ronald Reagan. Sleepy, sleepy. So when I count to three and steal the White House, China, you'll vote Republican. When I snap my fingers and invade Ontario, you'll vote Republican. And when I drag the nation through 8 years of carnage and incompetence and leave the place a bigger mess than Lindsay Lohan's trailer, then blame the Democrats for cleaning up too slow. You will awake refreshed, confused, and somewhat paranoid, and you'll remember nothing. And vote Republican.
Hello, and thank you for listening to great speeches and interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. Today's program starts with how big companies use plain English to rob you blind with David K. Johnston. And then after that, it's the best climate projections are extreme. And then after that is America Always at War with Danny Schechner, filmmaker and blogger.
This is Guns and Butter.
Something happening, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there.
Yeah, that's right.
Telling me.
I'm Bonnie Faulkner. Today on Guns and Butter, David K. Johnston. Today's show, The Fine Print, How Big Companies Use Plain English to Rob You Blind, the title of his new book. David K. Johnston is an investigative journalist and author, a specialist in economics and tax issues, and winner of the 2001 Pulitzer Prize for Beat Reporting. Since 2009, he has been a distinguished visiting lecturer teaching the tax, property, and regulatory law of the ancient world at Syracuse University College of Law and Whitman School of Management. Johnston is the board president of Investigative Reporters and Editors. He has been a reporter for the San Jose, Mercury News, the Detroit Free Press, the Los Angeles Times, the Philadelphia Inquirer, the New York Times, and Reuters. David K. Johnston, welcome.
Well, thank you.
That is quite a list of newspapers that you've worked for. You received the Pulitzer Prize for beat reporting. Do you enjoy beat reporting?
Well, beat reporting is just the category they put this in. And these were for a running investigation that I did about the tax system. But one of the biggest things wrong in journalism today is that we don't have enough beat reporting by people who understand the beats that they're covering.
Right. That makes a lot of sense, because a lot of people are writing about stuff that they don't have any on-the-ground information about, right?
Right. And we've cut way back in the number of reporters. I mean, down in Los Angeles, the scandal of the little blue-collar town of Bell, where the city manager was paid $800,000, the police chief over $500,000, and the council members about $250,000, it took place right out in the open. If there had been a reporter sitting in the Bell Council meetings, this would have all been written about. It never would have happened.
Right. You know, in your new book, The Fine Print, you talk about the bias in the media, which takes the corporate point of view, reporting on the benefits to investors and shareholders, not that of the customers and the public. You mentioned that when you were with the Philadelphia Inquirer, one of your beats was Atlantic City's casinos, and that prior to your arrival, the coverage was always about how much money the casinos were making, but you reported rather on how much money the gamblers were losing. I thought that was pretty funny.
The first month I got to Atlantic City, Bonnie, as the bureau chief down there, knowing I would have to do this, report the monthly numbers, because I went to explore the gambling industry and how it was going to spread across the country back in 92. You know, we only had gambling in two places, Nevada and Atlantic City. And every month the newspapers would say, you know, the casinos won a record amount of money last month. And my first month I wrote, players lost a record amount of money last month. Gambler losses were the largest at Trump Plaza.
I like that. I like that a lot. And then I guess you also mentioned that as soon as you left the Philadelphia Inquirer, they went back to reporting the old style.
Yep, everybody, they went back to doing it just like everybody else, even though if you think about it for a moment, there are only, at the time I left, there were 12 casinos, but there were 32 million people a year who came to visit Atlantic City. When there's an announcement that two airlines are merging, the story almost always is, oh, the merger of these two airlines, it'll strengthen the balance sheets of the companies and allow them to have a more rational route structure, instead of saying, consumers are likely to face higher prices and fewer choices because of the pending merger proposed today. Well, a lot more people buy seats to sit on airplanes than own stock in airplanes. And this is something that the media that has happened as the advertising world pressed newspapers to go from being mass circulation publications to move up the income chain. And now you see this in full flower in the kind of coverage you get from, on television, CNBC, where in the wonderful phrase of the Columbia Journalism Review, CEOs are treated with kid gloves and their critics with boxing gloves. You see it in the New York Times' deal book and in the Wall Street Journal. And it is this coverage that takes the point of view of this very narrow segment of our society. I mean, apart from retirement plans, very few Americans own stock. And yet that's the focus of the coverage. And the theory is, well, people who own stock are the ones advertisers want, except people who own stock tend to be older and more set in their ways and less likely to switch, you know, the brand of beer or hair color or underwear that they favor.
Right. And I find that a very frustrating aspect about reading the newspapers, which I like to read the newspapers, but it's hard to get a gauge on what's really going on because the reporters are not reporting from the public's point of view, which
right.
is what you've just explained.
Right. And let me give you a real good example where your audience is in California. In September, Governor Jerry Brown signed a law called SB 1161 that took away a legal right every Californian has had since 1913. And the Los Angeles Times mentioned it in passing in, I think, the seventh or eighth paragraph of a roundup of bills that he had signed. This is a momentous piece of legislation that can have a very serious effect on you, and it's part of what I write about in the book. The right that you had was to telephone service. If you called up AT&T, assuming you're in their territory, and said, this is my street address, you know, I want to open an account and have a telephone, they were required to serve you. Under this new law, as long as it's not the traditional copper wire circuit telephone, the traditional what's called public switched telephone network, they are not required to serve you. And, of course, they announced just a couple of days after this law was passed that they intend to shut down the copper wire public switch telephone network. So you could be end up with no telephone service, because the way the law is written, it says the state has no role whatsoever. So you call up AT&T and say, I'd like telephone service, and for whatever reason, they don't serve you. A clerk who's being a jerk, not enough people in the building you're in want service to make it worthwhile to them to serve the building. And maybe some really foul reason. I mean, maybe you get somebody who doesn't like your politics or your looks or your race, but they're not stupid enough to say that. You have no rights at all under the new law. None. Now, that's a huge switch from you are required to serve somebody as long as they pay their bill to no rights at all.
Oh, my God. Well, the thing of it is, all of the local carriers depend on AT&T because they have to contract with them because they have to use their lines. I just went through this. I just moved, and I put in an order for AT&T service. Well, I won't go into details, but it was just an absolute and total nightmare. They drove me crazy on the phone. It was so complicated and so many different packages, and I couldn't figure it out. And then some fast talker got on the phone with me. Turned out they wanted me to spend, in addition to this package, $100 for their modem, etc. Then I called back and realized I didn't have voicemail. They said, oh, no, that's going to cost another $10. Long story short, I canceled it and went with a local carrier, and I'm so happy I did. But that
you have the option of doing that. Lots of people don't. I mean, the theory of this bill is, this new law is there's competitive telephone service. But in many places, there isn't. And this law, which, by the way, an almost identical law has been passed in five other states, and the goal here is to get every state to pass a law taking your right away. Now, I'm not arguing here that we need to keep necessarily the old public switch telephone network, although let me point out that during Hurricane Sandy, everybody, if you lost your electric power, you lost your telephone service unless you were on the old network. And then, even in flooded areas, that system kept working. There are places in America where people are now talking on the telephone with copper wires that were installed in the 19th century.
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Well, now you're saying that this new bill that Jerry Brown signed means that AT&T doesn't have to keep the old copper wire in service?
Well, they haven't gotten that part of it yet. I mean, you have to understand the way companies think as opposed to the way, you know, news works or our personal lives, okay? So you meet somebody and you're in love, or you decide, I've had it with this, I want out of my marriage. These are emotional things, and we move on them, and we're motivated by them. Or, oh, I want to buy this new car or this house, and you want to move on them. The news, the most important, if you're in the newspaper business, word you can possibly have is yesterday, unless you can somehow, because the paper didn't go to bed till after midnight, put in the paper early this morning. But that's not how companies think. AT&T has been working for 20 years to achieve its goal. And they achieve it a little bit here and a little bit there, and they take their time about it. And by the way, if you're a lobbyist, that's a good thing. It means you keep getting a check every month from the company. And AT&T wanted this so much that in Sacramento, where there are 120 members of the state legislature, they employed 120 lobbyists. Basically, they sewed up everybody in town. And why did they do that? Well, then let's say journalists or anybody else wants to hear the other side of the story. Everyone will be in agreement. You can go to every lobbyist in town, and they'll all tell you, this is the way to do this. There's complete unanimous agreement. No one questions this.
And so you're saying that after the passage of this bill, AT&T is not required to provide service for everyone. Is that right?
That's exactly right. And once they succeed in the next step, which the Wall Street Journal had a story about just a few weeks ago, that is shutting down the traditional old copper wire system, which is fully depreciated and written off. They haven't installed copper wire in more years than the economic, for tax purposes, life of copper wire. So it has no cost to them as capital. Once they shut down that old system, first of all, if you live in a place in the country and a tree limb knocks out the power, you won't have telephone service. And if you're, you know, that tree limb that knocked out the power also trapped you inside your house and you need to make a phone call to stay alive, you're just going to die. Sorry about that. You're just going to die for the profits of AT&T. And their argument, AT&T's argument is, I'm being ridiculous. There's a competitive market. If you don't like us, you can go to another carrier. Well, in many places, the only cable running down the street is AT&T's. But let's assume you're on a street that has Comcast. And so you could go to Comcast and you could buy their package. Well, Comcast, same thing. They're on the electric system that will fail. Their system will fail if the electric system fails. Secondly, all these companies want to sell you packages. That's what you got, Bonnie.
Right.
Instead of being able to say, hey, listen, I'm not interested in the Internet. I watch cable TV. I just want a telephone.
Right.
Well, even if you want to do that, they want more money than they did for the old system. And I opened the book with the story of a guy in Hollywood, a studio executive who is known for being a very good husband of people's money and who's been behind some really terrific films like Dead Poets Society and Good Morning Vietnam. And he had a meeting back with the phone company people 12 years ago when he wanted to leave the studio and go out on his own to get some money to start up. And they offered him everything he wanted, but and he was, you know, why were they so perfectly, we got lots of money? And then they told him that, well, within 10 years, we're going to triple the amount of money we're getting from all of our customers. And lo and behold, 10 years later, he was paying almost seven times as much for his telephone service. So, and this is not traditional competition. By the way, if you just need a telephone, the phone companies would say to you, well, then go get a cell phone. Well, there are only four cell phone companies. And the market is overwhelmingly dominated by two of them, AT&T and Verizon. And, of course, cell phones don't work in many areas, some of them urban, some of them hilly areas. They tried to get this law passed in Kentucky, and so far they failed because people suddenly realized cell phones don't work in the hollers in Kentucky. But they're working on it, and they intend and they will succeed unless the public wakes up and the news media wakes up. The only two states where this issue became a public issue in the news, Kentucky and New Jersey, they lost. In California, none of the California papers. And remember, in the Bay Area, you basically really have two newspapers. You have the Hearst-owned San Francisco Chronicle, and then you have BANG, the Bay Area Newspaper Group, which is essentially every paper from Monterey to Vallejo and over on the Marin side. And they didn't cover this issue. I mean, if you ask yourself, if you're listening to the show, did you know that AT&T was getting a law passed taking away your nearly century-old right to telephone service?
Outrageous. I'm speaking with investigative journalist and author David K. Johnston about his new book, The Fine Print, How Big Companies Use Plain English to Rob You Blind. David Johnston has been a reporter for the San Jose Mercury News, the Detroit Free Press, the Los Angeles Times, the Philadelphia Inquirer, the New York Times, and Reuters. What a list. I'm Bonnie Faulkner. This is Guns and Butter. David, I'd like to talk a little bit more about the telecommunications industry because it's so very, very important. Whatever happened to the information superhighway and fiber optics? You mentioned that in your book that the telecommunications industry no longer wants the term information superhighway used. Why not?
Because they got the money to build it, and then they didn't build it. This is one of the most astonishing stories that the high-techie type people get this, but nobody else seems to. I go to China at least once a year to lecture. And the last 2 years, I also went to Singapore and Macau and Hong Kong and South Korea, all of which have vastly better and faster internets than we have here in the United States. And if you go to France, if you buy that triple play package, that's, Bonnie, what the AT&T salesperson was getting you to sign up for with all the extra doodads?
Yes.
Here in the U.S., the average price for that with the taxes that are added is $160. In France, the total price is less than $40. And you get worldwide calling to 70 countries, whereas all we get is calling to Canada. You get worldwide live television. All we get is domestic television. And you get an internet that's 10 times faster. Well, we gave the phone companies, just AT&T and Verizon, forget all the other phone companies, you know, there's little ones out there plus the third baby bell in the Rocky Mountains Quest, now called CenturyLink. We gave them at least $360 billion of rate increases. That's about $1,200 for every person in America. For a family of four, it's about $4,800 to build the information superhighway. Well, less than 10% of American households will have access to fiber optic service. And the phone companies and the cable companies go around bragging, we're meeting and are on our way to meeting the government standards. Where I live in western New York, up near Lake Ontario, Time Warner runs ads about the blazingly fast internet. To the rest of the world, this is a joke. America now ranks 29th in the world in the speed of its internet. And remember, because we invented the internet, America started out number one with the internet. Taxpayers built and created and paid for the internet. Well, now we're 29th in the world. And among countries that have faster internet than we do are Ukraine, Lithuania, Latvia, Moldova, and Bulgaria. We are behind Bulgaria. And we pay almost the highest prices in the world. We pay more than four times what the French do for our inferior system. When I was in South Korea, I talked to a young man who had been to the U.S., and he had seen the ads on TV for Time Warner, and he, not having grown up here, I had to help him while he was asking about, you know, what's the name of that dog-like thing they have? And I said, a Wile E. Coyote. And he said, yes, and then the bird, the Roadrunner, blazingly fast. And he said, what are they talking about? Because the internet in South Korea is 10 to 20 times faster. And by the way, we pay per bit of information used 16 times what South Koreans pay. 16 times. And you can get that high-speed internet anywhere. Now, Korea is not that big, but if you're living in Healdsburg, you may still be on dial-up. If you're living on the Mendocino Coast, I'm sure you're still on dial-up. But if you live in a rural area of South Korea, you're not near Seoul, where about a third of the population lives.
Well, now,
you can still get it. You can still get this high-speed internet.
If they were paid to build out the fiber optics network, then how can they get away with not doing it?
Because the regulators haven't required them to do it, and because they got the rules changed. And, you know, they've co-opted the government. They have captured the regulatory agencies, and the news media is not covering this. And let me tell you how, I mean, this is not what news organizations want to cover. I mean, why is it we have so much news that we all know the names of the Kardashian sisters, right? And a lot of us can tell you which guy they're kissing this week. But did you know that you're having your rights taken away and your life put in danger by various company policies? No. When I was at the New York Times, the last thing, big series I did was an investigative project about electricity pricing. And editors were like, oh, no, you know, and I basically used my position as a publisher to insist they had to let me do this. Well, several of the pieces ran on the front page, and they were all in the top 10 most emailed stories of the day. And I would say to them, see, people really are interested in this stuff. But it didn't change anything.
Isn't that too much?
In terms of, you know, what the news values are. The news values remain unchanged.
Exactly, exactly. You've been an investigative journalist for, what? What is it, David, 30 years?
About a half a day to get there if we travel by dragonfly. No, it's not in Spain, but all the same, you know it's a groovy name, and the wind's just right.
And now for something completely different.